They are denying access to many organizations that the displaced and starving in Burma desperately need today.
Pressure mounts on Myanmar and Rohingya crisis. It's Thursday, February 15th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome, and join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Olympic peace movement develops, a new look at foreign students in the United States, New York e-bike deliveries hits roadblock, cancer and lifestyle, where's the bus driver? It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley kept up the pressure on the government of Myanmar, also known as Burma, by denouncing government denials of ethnic cleansing in the wake of a security crackdown that forced hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee Western Rakhine State for Bangladesh.
To make sure no one contradicts their preposterous denials, they are preventing access to Rakhine to anyone or any organization that might bear witness to their atrocities, including the UN Security Council. And the result is that they are denying access to many organizations that the displaced and starving in Burma desperately need today.
Haley also cited media reports of the existence of mass graves also denied by the government. UN Refugee Chief Filippo Grandi warns with monsoon rains approaching, the world faces yet another refugee crisis with tens of thousands of Rohingya living in areas prone to flood and landslides. Monique Skidmore is both a professor and deputy vice chancellor of Australia's University of Tasmania and an expert on Myanmar. She tells VOA's Victor Beatty this is a global effort to pressure the government to resolve the matter.
It's also, I think, a way of the UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, trying to support the UN refugee chief and trying to make sure that whatever can be done quickly now to help to stop the repatriation involuntarily of the Rohingya occurs. So I really think that Nikki Haley wants to be very clear that we don't exacerbate the current situation by repatriating people into a state in which there has been no change to the laws, no change to the security situation.
She says the situation continues to be what she called a death sentence, and citing reports of mass graves by media outlets.
Indeed, and you would be aware that just recently, not just Indian Village, but also Gudapien Village has been the site of satellite images and date-stamped cell phone images of mass graves and of many, many bodies, some of them disfigured in their face and their hands by acid. And the military has said this week, in fact, the UN ambassador has told the Security Council that these graves have been investigated, that no such mass graves occur, no such incidents have occurred. And the Chinese ambassador to the UN has told the Security Council that stability and order has now been restored to Rakhine State.
Why are they denying it if the evidence shows otherwise?
There is a 60-year history of denying any forms of mass graves, of mass human rights violations that occur with ethnic minority populations in the country. The Burmese military, the Tatmadaw, just has a very well-oiled machinery, a very careful propaganda machine that is very good at denying, at covering up, and simply pretending that such atrocities never occurred. And they are protected by the Chinese and the Russian members of the UN Security Council. And they know that it's unlikely, no matter what Nikki Haley says, that the UN Security Council would allow serious resolutions against Myanmar to occur because of that veto vote that would be used by both China and Russia.
Monique Skidmore said China favors an approach that emphasizes the need to tackle poverty with development aid to improve the lives of the Rohingya minority, rather than to call for justice and accountability made by the U.S. ambassador. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Chinese paper says UK trying to grab attention with South China Sea mission. Tonga begins cleanup of powerful cyclone's damage. Facing U.S. pressure, North Korea turns to sports diplomacy. North Korean cheerleaders are tightly controlled to prevent defections. Solar power push lights up options for India's rural women. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories, and there's much more too, on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. South Korea continues to drive the Olympic peace process amidst criticism that North Korea is only going along for the ride to ease economic sanctions without giving up its nuclear weapons. South Korea President Moon Jae-in's persistent outreach effort to reduce tensions with North Korea helped bring about the North's participation in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics in the South, and a pause in Pyongyang's provocative missile and nuclear tests. In a joint gesture of reconciliation, North and South Korean Olympians marched together under a special unification flag at the opening ceremony Friday. Kim Yo-jong, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, also visited the South for the Olympics. She is the first member of the ruling Kim family to visit the South since the division of Korea at the end of World War II. While meeting with Moon, Kim conveyed an invitation for the South Korean president for a possible leaders' summit. There have only been two previous leader summits between North and South Korea. The last one happened over a decade ago in 2007. Kim Jong-un, who came to power in late 2011, has yet to meet a foreign head of state. John Deluria, North Korean analyst with Yonsei University in Seoul, says this easing of inter-Korean tensions is the direct result of President Moon's diplomatic persistence and indicates Kim Jong-un's willingness to respond to constructive engagement.
There will be many bumps on the road, but we're seeing real political will in Seoul and Pyongyang and clear messaging.
Engagement skeptics, however, see Pyongyang's openness to dialogue as a deceptive ploy. Regional security analyst Grant Newsham with the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo.
North Korea is manipulating South Korea and very effectively as well. I think that as before too long, too much time has passed, that I think that President Moon is going to find that he runs into a brick wall.
North Korea's Olympic cooperation, skeptics say, is aimed at undermining the U.S. maximum pressure policy to force the North to change its behavior with increased economic sanctions and the threat of military force without making any meaningful concessions to end its nuclear program. In the last 2 years, North Korea has accelerated its weapons testing and made considerable progress towards developing a long-range nuclear missile that can reach targets in the U.S. mainland. Pyongyang insists that its nuclear deterrent is needed to defend against a possible U.S. invasion. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has sent mixed signals as its willingness to engage talks with North Korea. John Deluria says if the Trump administration is serious about pursuing denuclearization talks with North Korea, it will likely have to refrain from threatening fire and fury-like rhetoric and be prepared to offer significant concessions.
You have to be ready to make real compromises. You have to recognize that North Koreans feel under threat. They are under threat. We do have hostile relations with them. And so you have to find serious ways to reduce that level of threat so that you can get them to reduce their threat toward us.
The United States, however, demands North Korea make a firm commitment to halt its nuclear program before official negotiations to end sanctions can begin. Our thanks to VOA correspondent Brian Padden and Lee Yoon-ji in Seoul for contributing to this report. Happening now in Asia, Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has ordered a ban for Filipinos to work in Kuwait following the alleged murder of a maid. Some 10,000 Filipino domestic workers are expected to take up Duterte's offer of a free flight home. Kuwait has condemned Duterte's call to evacuate his country's workers. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. While matters concerning Russia have been prominent in U.S. news for over a year, one U.S. senator sees the biggest challenge to the United States concerns an issue other than Russia. VOA Asia's Ira Melman has more.
When the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee held its hearing on the greatest threats to the United States Monday, most believed that most of the talk would be centered on the threat posed by Russia. One of the senators on the committee, Florida Republican Marco Rubio, had another idea.
I do believe that Russia, Vladimir Putin in particular's efforts around the world are very important, but the biggest issue of our time, in my view, and I think in the view of most of the members of this committee, and I would venture to guess most of the members of this panel, is China and the risks they pose. I'm not sure in the 240-some-odd year history of this nation we've ever faced a competitor and potential adversary of this scale, scope, and capacity. It is my personal view, and it's shared by many people, that they are carrying out a well-orchestrated, well-executed, very patient, long-term strategy to replace the United States as the most powerful and influential nation on Earth.
Rubio then sought to find out the thoughts on his presumption from the nation's most senior intelligence officials, like National Intelligence Director Dan Coats.
We have full awareness of what the Chinese are attempting. They have full awareness of what the Chinese are attempting to do on a global basis. There's no question that that what you have just articulated is what's happening with China. They're doing it in a very smart way. They're doing it in a very effective way. They are looking beyond their own region. I think it's clear that they have a long-term strategic objective to become a world power, and they are executing throughout the whole of government ways in which they can accomplish that.
Rubio's attention then turned to FBI Director Chris Wray, from whom he wanted to know if intelligence was being gathered and transmitted home by some of the tens of thousands of Chinese students now attending U.S. colleges.
I think in this setting, I would just say that the use of non-traditional collectors, especially in the academic setting, whether it's professors, scientists, students, we see in almost every field office that the FBI has around the country. It's not just in major cities, it's in small ones as well. It's across basically every discipline. And I think the level of naivete on the part of the academic sector about this creates its own issues. They're exploiting the very open research and development environment that we have, which we all revere. But they're taking advantage of it. So one of the things we're trying to do is view the China threat as not just a whole of government threat, but a whole of society threat on their end. And I think it's going to take a whole of society response by us. So it's not just the intelligence community, but it's raising awareness within our academic sector, within our private sector as part of the defense.
Senator Rubio wanted more from the FBI director about the role of the Confucius Institutes operating in many U.S. colleges as well as worldwide.
Last week I wrote a letter to five higher education institutions in Florida about the Confucius Institutes, which are funded by Chinese government dollars at U.S. schools. And it is my view that they're complicit in these efforts to covertly influence public opinion and to teach half-truths designed to present Chinese history, government, or official policy in the most favorable light. Do you share concerns about Confucius Institutes as a tool of that whole-of-society effort and as a way to exploit the sort of naive view among some in the academic circles about what the purpose of these institutes could be?
We do share concerns about the Confucius Institutes. We've been watching that development for a while. It's just one of many tools that they take advantage of. We have seen some decrease recently in their own enthusiasm and commitment to that particular program, but it is something that we're watching warily and in certain instances have developed, appropriate investigative steps.
We have made attempts to contact some of those who are connected with colleges, with large groups of students from China, along with Asian American support organizations. None got back to us in time for the preparation of this report. However, the Daily Beast website quotes John C. Yang, the head of a group called Asian Americans Advancing Justice, as saying, "We understand there is a real threat coming out of China, but expect that top-notched intelligence agencies have better tools to rely on than racial profiling of every Chinese person coming to America." Ira Melman, VOA Asia.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Two ethnic armed groups in Myanmar signed a ceasefire with the government as leader Aung San Suu Kyi seeks to revive a stuttering peace process to end decades of conflict. Ending near perpetual civil war has been Suu Kyi's stated top priority, but some of the worst fighting has come since she took office. Stay up to date each day at VOA 60 Online and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, electric-powered bicycles, known as e-bikes, are a common sight among New York's immigrant delivery workers who consider the bikes a necessity to make a living wage. The problem is they're illegal to operate in the city. The law creates a dilemma for those immigrants who feel that they have no alternative employment options. VOA's Ramon Taylor and Yi Yuan hop off the bike lane and tell us more.
Almost 60, Aimin Liu delivers 30 to 40 Chinese food orders across Manhattan by electric bicycle or e-bike every day.
My legs are no good. I'm not capable of riding a regular bike. Both of my feet hurt. I have arthritis on both sides.
Without an electric motor-powered bicycle, legal to own but illegal to operate in New York, Liu says he might either physically collapse or at best deliver just half the number of orders on a given day. Many of New York's delivery workers are Chinese immigrants in their 50s and 60s. Their job requires efficiency and long hours to earn a living wage, one that is largely dependent on tips.
Sometimes we go to places that are very far. If we're too slow, the customers will be unhappy. They would refuse the meal and demand a refund, and when we get back from the run, our boss would be cursing at us.
Last year, the city's mayor and police department announced stricter measures to hold e-bike operators and the restaurants that use them accountable, citing hazardous use on streets and sidewalks. For every delivery run, e-bike workers run the risk of confiscation and fines of up to $500.
All told, we're looking at 4 to 5 days off. So when you're looking at the loss of 4 to 5 days worth of pay, on top of the $500 fine, we're easily looking at an economic loss of over $1,000.
This kind of crackdown, forcing workers out of work, is, I mean, you're impoverishing an already impoverished community.
Do Lee, an advocate for the Biking Public Project, says arguing that e-bikes are unsafe don't add up.
It's largely these very privileged, wealthy residents who are complaining about very low-wage immigrant workers who often don't have English fluency and are very low-wage. And so they lack a lot of political capital to fight back on this.
E-bikes can typically reach speeds of 32 kilometers per hour, fast enough to pose a safety issue, which concerns many New Yorkers.
They never stop on a red light. They walk or go any directions.
I'm very sympathetic because I know how hard they work and how they've got to, be as productive as they can possibly be. But they should have some more awareness and consideration for pedestrians.
Li Cheng Liu, who works 5 to 6 12-hour shifts per week to support both himself and his mother in China, says he doesn't know how long he'll continue as an e-bike worker. But as a member of the New York Delivery Workers Union, he feels they need to fight back. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Many newly married couples in Thailand have lined up to sign their marriage licenses on Valentine's Day. Thailand's health ministry passed out prenatal vitamins in a campaign to encourage couples to have children and hopefully help boost the country's birth rate. Boost your story intake with a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, February is National Cancer Prevention Month here in the United States, and the American Institute for Cancer Research is renewing efforts to inform the public how lifestyle changes can significantly lower the risk of several of the most common types of cancer. VOA's George Pudich tells us the campaign has been boosted by the results of a recent large-scale study that firmly established the association between diabetes and obesity and several types of cancer.
Scientists say a healthy life requires 5 essential factors: not smoking, keeping body weight in check, regular physical activity, a healthy diet, and limited alcohol consumption. analyzing data collected over decades from about 340,000 people around the world, researchers in Britain found that those who met all five requirements were 32% less likely to develop lung, breast, or colon cancer, the most common cancers.
Looking at things like obesity, you may see different results, slightly different results in different studies, but when you add them all together into one set of analyses, it really helps give you a full picture of what's going on.
Dr. Anne McTiernan, a researcher at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, says the increased availability of food with high content of fat, sugar, and salt is contributing to rising rates of diabetes and obesity. Most people know they should avoid fast food, yet because it is so available, many have trouble changing their diet. But Dr. McTiernan says people should not wait for the government or industry to make their food choices.
I would say get educated, figure out if you're gaining weight over time, figure out if you have a high risk of cancer, and then take steps yourself, the things that you can do for yourself and your family.
Scientists in the U.S. are working on a simple blood test that could detect several types of cancer much earlier than before, raising the chance of stopping its development.
For some people, an early indication of cancer can be a teachable moment, a time where they're more aware that they're at risk and that they could be making changes and perhaps they'll want to make changes.
Dr. McTiernan says her own research shows that getting someone who is overweight or obese to lose weight or someone who is inactive to become active can really reduce the risk of cancer. George Putich, VOA News.
Getting onto a bus with a driver may be a thing of the past someday, perhaps pretty soon. Already, there's a technology company in Sweden that's trying out a driverless minibus in Stockholm. We have a driver. It's VOA's Deborah Block who steers us through this story.
On the outskirts of Stockholm, this self-driving minibus could become the future of public transportation. Rather than a driver, the bus has a so-called host who keeps watch over the vehicle and closes the door once passengers have boarded.
This vehicle doesn't have a traditional steering wheel, no dashboard, so it drives itself, and you don't have a driver, traditional driver. So the person on board, the host, can just interact with stopping or starting the vehicle.
The bus uses sensors that allow self-driving vehicles to see what's around them so they can safely navigate roads.
And if a person jumps in front of the vehicle, it sees that person and reacts to it, either to slow down or stop completely.
For 6 months, the pre-programmed bus will shuttle passengers on a 1.5-kilometer route located in an area with information and communication companies.
This will help us travel together in a better way from door to door, from your bus stop to your office or from your bus stop to your home.
During the trial, the buses are traveling no faster than 20 kilometers per hour. These riders like them.
I was expecting it to be a little bit bumpy, like it should be a head start, like a jumpy start, but it was really smooth and I'm impressed.
Computers tend to do less errors than humans, so if we could get more robots out in the traffic and less humans out in traffic, I think that the amount of fatal accidents and accidents overall in traffic will reduce.
But this bus technology is still in the beginning stages, says the company that developed it.
This is solutions for the last mile, to be able to travel from your bus stop to your office. So replacing drivers will be far in the future.
Deborah Block, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us. You can contact us on our Facebook page at VOA Asia or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. You can hear us online in those places as well, but we always enjoy Our listeners who find us on the radio, many radio stations around Asia where you can catch our program, including the voice of Chungrung Star Radio, FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Our thanks go out to everyone there who is listening today. And as always, we love to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.